Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, a TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Today, we're looking at carbon dioxide, or rather the shortage of it, for use in the food and drink industry. Now, CO2 is used right across the sector, soft drink production, of course, but also meat processing, brewing, baking, and many, many others. But CO2 is usually produced as a byproduct of ammonia production, which is a highly energy-intensive process. Now, the soaring price of energy means that major plants are closing because they become uneconomical, including the hugely important CF Industries Cheshire plant. Now, we've been here before. Significant CO2 scarcity in 2018 sent shockwaves through the industry. But could we be facing an even worse situation this time round? Prices of CO2 are already rocketing and availability is unreliable. I can't get hold of dry ice for my live shows, weirdly. So what can the industry do to prepare itself? I'm delighted to be joined by Emma McClarkin, Chief Executive at the British Beer and Pub Association. Hello there, Emma.
Hello there.
Great to have you. And we've also got Mark Lorch, Professor of Public Engagement and Science Communication at the Department for Chemistry, Biochemistry and Chemical Engineering at the University of Hull. Hello, Mark.
Great to be here.
Right, let's dive straight in there with you then, Mark. Let's cover the basics. Why is CO2 so important to the food and drink industry? And what does it do that other gases can't do?
So CO2, carbon dioxide, has a number of properties that make it really ideal for all sorts of roles in the food industry. So firstly, really importantly, it's inert. It doesn't react very well with anything else. So if you, for example, package food under CO2, if you put it in your salad bags, for example, it stops the salad going off. It suppresses the growth of microorganisms and bacteria and so on. So that's one of its uses. It also dissolves really easily in water. So that's important for your fizzy drinks, for example. You know, you can dissolve it, you can pressurize it, you can seal the bottle up, and the carbon dioxide stays dissolved in the water in your fizzy drink. And when you open it up, it comes out of solution and generates the lovely fizzy bubbles that we all love. It's also acidic. So that's important because it gives the fizzy drinks in a particular taste. It gives it that tang, the acidic sort of lemony, almost like tang that we're familiar with in so many soft drinks and so on. So that's its sort of main uses, main properties that make it important. And it's also, or at least it was, really quite cheap. It was a byproduct of all sorts of other industries, and so it was easy to incorporate it, sequester it, grab it and put it into all sorts of food products. And then it actually is used in all sorts of other things as well. It's used to knock out animals before they're slaughtered, so they're slaughtered more humanely. You find it in all sorts of other odd, weird places. Pop sweets, you know, the sweets that crackle when you're there. That's high pressure carbon dioxide inside the sweet, and as you eat the sweets and the sugar dissolves, the bubbles effectively burst in your mouth. So lots of interesting places it shows up, but essentially it's inert, it dissolves, and it's acidic, and that's what makes it so great in so much of the food industry.
Beautifully done. I love that. And the meat industry has been particularly vocal about this problem, because if you can't use CO2 in the slaughtering process, then obviously massive animal welfare issues. Okay, Emma, can you tell us a little bit more about how CO2 is used in pubs and in beer? I mean, I know we get fizzy beer, but doesn't it arrive fizzy? And you know, every time I've been into a pub cellar, it's full of gas canisters. What's going on in the pub?
So a sustainable supply of CO2 is really important to the beer in the pub industry. Number one, because it's used in our brewing process in the production of lager specifically. So that's what gives us those lovely lager sensations and tingles. And then, of course, in the pub, in the supply chain, where we store it, it helps us store it, as Mark has explained, the chemistry behind that, but also in the dispensing. Applying the gas to the product at the point of dispense as well. So when we can't get our hands on a sustainable supply of it, number one, production of beer becomes a bit of a problem, and we don't know if we're going to have to wind down our volumes or choose different beers to produce, because of course Cascale doesn't require CO2 in its production, so they are always going to be available during that period of time if there is ever any shortages. But you know, obviously our pubs use it in many of their products when they are dispensing, so it puts an awful lot of risk at a very difficult time for trade, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be absolutely clear, a keg of lager, is that carbonated, or does the pub have to add the CO2 to make it sparkling?
I think it would depend on your product. Most will have it inside in the production of the lager, for example, anyway. Some will have an extra gas dispense that's put through the pipelines when they're dispensing it. But you'd probably need to talk to somebody who's more technically employed than me.
Gotcha,
to give you the definitive on that one. But it is a mix, and that's why there are so many different containers within the pub cellar.
Yeah.
And you just sometimes get a bit of a flat beer sometimes if in the dispense system there is a problem with that.
Yeah, and I believe that you can get a nitrogen-rich gas supply for different things, so things like Guinness or ales. You know, it's more nitrogen than CO2, and then it doesn't get so bubbly, which is really, I'm just fascinated by this. Anyway, but let's get back to the supply chain issues, because that's what we're here to talk about. Mark, can you explain the supply chain? And I mean, we talked a little bit about it, about changes in production, but what's going on right now?
So I think actually, firstly, it's really ironic that we're talking about a CO2 problem, you know, not having enough carbon dioxide at the same time as we're producing too much carbon dioxide. But the problem, you'd think, well, surely the solution is just to remove the excess carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But the problem is there isn't a great deal of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You know, it's not very easy to actually grab the carbon dioxide directly from the atmosphere, sequester it, and use it in these sorts of systems. So instead, what happens is that the carbon dioxide is captured as a byproduct of other industries, and most notably the fertilizer industry. So fertilizer is, the basis for fertilizer is ammonia. Okay, ammonia is nitrogen and hydrogen. Yeah, the nitrogen comes from the atmosphere. That's easy to grab. We can get that from the atmosphere really easily because there's masses of it there. The hydrogen generally comes from something called steam reformation of methane, okay, or natural gas. So you take the natural gas, you have to heat it with water and steam, and that produces carbon dioxide and hydrogen. The hydrogen goes off into the fertilizer industry, and you get left with the carbon dioxide. Now, because you produce quite a lot of it in this sort of industry, it's quite easy to capture, and then it's a byproduct, and it gets shipped out to the food industry, for example. Problem is, of course, at the minute, is that we've got this shortage of natural gas. The prices have increased massively, and that's had an impact on the fertilizer industry. So fertilizer plants are shutting down, not producing the fertilizer, therefore not producing the spare carbon dioxide. And so we end up in the situation where we've got this carbon dioxide shortage. But all linked back to basically the gas prices.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? And so CO2 is basically an afterthought. You know, it's almost your sort of, yeah, it's a happy problem for the chemical producers to be able to sideline.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of the fertilizer plants, in fact, don't even bother capturing it. It just goes off into the atmosphere. There is a lot more carbon capture going on, so it may well be that this gets resolved. So power stations are starting to capture carbon dioxide. Drax power station near me, you know, is looking at carbon capture. A lot of other industries, cement production produces a huge amount of carbon dioxide. Again, they're looking at, they're capturing the carbon. So it may well be that these industries start capturing it for use in other industries and selling off their carbon dioxide, as opposed to at the moment, loft, and the plan is just to go and pump it back into empty gas reserves.
Yeah. And is there such a thing as food grade CO2 and non-food grade CO2? I mean, I guess Drax capturing it is not just as simple as, all right, stick it in a canister.
No, exactly. So they have to, it has to be really clean. So the you know, if it's the stuff that's produced from other industries, they're going to have to clean it up before it goes in the food industry.
Well, let's talk about the economic viability then, Emma. We're seeing price rises for CO2, but what's the scale of that? How much does CO2 normally cost, and what are the impacts that your sector are feeling at the moment?
Well, we're seeing and experiencing extreme volatility in the cost of and the market surrounding CO2. And you know, for my members, you know, we were seeing week on week reports of increases. So from one week to the next week, it was 400%. You know, we're paying four times the price that you were paying the week before. It was that extreme. So it really is a difficult thing for businesses to be putting in to their businesses at this time, because they're seeing such extreme supply chain pressures across the board with cost inflations, and that was really making the cost of doing business extremely tough. And we're hopeful that there'll be a resolution to the shortages that we're experiencing right now by the end of this month, and that we'll see the prices come down. But it has been extremely difficult for businesses to understand where they're going to get their supply from and how much it's going to cost from a week to week basis.
Yeah, and what I hear from a lot of publicans is that it's not just the cost, it's the lack of confidence that you can actually get your hands on the stuff, and the it's the changes rather than just the simple cost itself. But when there were shortages in 2018, what was the effect? What was the impact on the drinks industry, and are there comparisons between the shortages now?
In 2018, there'd been quite a prolonged scarcity of CO2 that then was combined with a plant, one of the regional plants that shut down for refurbishment over the summer, that really put enormous pressure on the market. So it really did sort of sneak up on businesses, and they didn't have a response to where they would get other sources of CO2. And brewers, for example, had to make very difficult choices about which beers that they actually brewed and put into production. So there was a volume problem. There was a product problem in the summer of 2018. This time around, though, it is, you know, the very unexpected announcement that the plant was closing, the largest plant of CO2 production was closing down in Billingham, that caused the problems. And it is a big problem, because until that plant secures its future and we know that it can be up and running again with production uninterrupted, we're going to have a problem with knowing that there's going to be sustainability in that supply chain. And that is something that we're deeply worried about. I mean, even as an industry, we're just talking about how you can produce CO2. We produce CO2 in the production of beer, but it is the capture and storage and then the transportation of that that becomes quite expensive and problematic. So we are looking at our side of what we could potentially do to help the supply chain in CO2 for ourselves and for different industries. But, you know, this is something that we're having to deal with in a time where we should be brewing with confidence the volumes we'll need for Christmas. It's one of our busiest trading periods that we're looking forward to. And that's why it's particularly difficult at this time, because planning for business, not only the cost of it, but actually then making sure we got the production up and running is difficult.
And can you give us some sort of indication? I know these things are really tricky to pull apart, but how much does the CO2 price contribute to the overall cost of production? I mean, can we talk about the amount pennies added to a pint?
You know, well, when we have no CO2 crisis, it's only a fraction of production cost that it is. But at the moment, with the surcharges that we're seeing, you know, we're seeing some quotes up to £3,000 a ton. It's adding significant cost into the production. So, you know, that would be coming out, looking at perhaps adding £2 to an 8-pack of beer. This is a very substantial increase that we're seeing because of the jump in prices. So,
wow, that is huge, isn't it?
You know, that's a sort of estimate of where that's landing. And that's why we need to see these surcharges come down. And of course, the energy crisis has been blamed for that. So we need to get to grips with the energy crisis as well, to hopefully reduce the cost of the production of fertilizer and the mainstay for CO2 capture as well. So we really got to hope that this comes down so that it doesn't have the knock-on impact of increasing a pint of beer.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested in the how that works in a retail setting. I mean, are we likely to see the carbonated drink, the lager, being 20 pence more than the IPA in the pub? could producers just simply move to a different gas, or does it have to be CO2?
It has to be CO2. So we're going to have a problem in the production of lager. Lager is actually held in its containers for longer in its production as well. So it is an expensive product in and of itself. But you can always switch to cask ale. If there is a shortage, I can recommend that you go and do that. Of course, it has a shorter shelf life. So, you know, we have a problem from that perspective as well. But it is difficult at this moment in time with the prices, and particularly with consumers, because we're seeing, you know, everybody's feeling the pinch. The cost of living crisis is very real. And so additional cost increases to product is unwanted by ourselves and by the consumers. And we absolutely want to keep them coming through the doors. And so it is really the worst time that this CO2 crisis could have come, because we're already seeing extreme headwinds creating this perfect storm.
Yeah. Well, let's have a little look at the rest of the landscape of this. Mark, is there a way in which this crisis can be averted? I mean, in the last crisis, a deal was made between the government and the supplier, CF Fertilizers. I mean, can that simply be done again? I mean, I know.
Well, you know, that's really, I suppose, a question for the politicians. I mean, they could simply pay, these fertilizer producers to carry on producing it and the fertilizer and the carbon dioxide. I suppose one of the other ways is to actually look at the alternatives. You know, what other alternatives are there to CO2 in some industries? If you can't replace the CO2, as Emma said, in lager, but you can use nitrogen in place of CO2 in some cases. So one of the reasons why, as I mentioned before, salad is packed under carbon dioxide is because it's inert and it stops some bacteria growing. You could use nitrogen in place of CO2 in that situation, for example, and that might relieve some of the demand for CO2, leaving it for those industries that are absolutely reliant on CO2. Similarly, nitrogen could be used in the slaughter of animals. Again, it's inert. The key reason why you give them CO2 is because that effectively knocks them out. And humanely, nitrogen could potentially do the same thing. And then, I mean, you know, I suppose maybe it is also a case of us changing our drinking habits a bit. As Emma mentioned, you know, ales maybe don't need the CO2. Some beers are actually use nitrogen to form bubbles and foams instead of carbon dioxide. So you mentioned it earlier, Guinness, for example, has the reason why you have such a different type of head on a pint of stout is because that's got nitrogen in it, and that nitrogen produces much, much smaller bubbles. So it gives it that much more creamy, foamier texture. So maybe we'll have to change some of our drinking habits as well, switch to the stouts whilst we've got a bit of a shortage as well. So there's some of the alternatives.
Okay, Emma, I would imagine the idea of changing like that is disastrous in the short term for pubs and for drinks makers. But do you think that's going to end up happening in some way?
Well, we're absolutely looking at the rationalisation of CO2. We have explored alternative gases. The thing is, we're extremely proud of the quality that we're able to achieve, and people are very familiar with our products and our brands, and they have an expectation of that. So there's very little you can do without sort of compromising on that level of quality, but we are doing everything that we can to reduce use, make sure that we're not wasting anything in the processes. If there are alternates that we can look at, that we're doing so, but we really need to find a way that we can just stabilize that. So, you know, looking at different ways that we could also get CO2, anaerobic digestion from farmers, for example, looking at all these different sources that you can do that, it just does make it at this moment a little bit more complex. So, you know, when we have a large fertilizer plant that are open, they can capture a large resource of CO2. But we are certainly looking at different ways of not only finding that supply, but also looking at our product as well.
Yeah. And do you think that businesses are making changes to mitigate these risks at the moment? Are you seeing people having to fundamentally reassess their slate of products and the way that they store them? Are there changes afoot?
Well, there is no problems with production at the moment. We're very lucky. We've been able to just see ourselves through with supply that we've got. But people will be looking at seeing if they can alternate to switch to different gases or or capture some of their own CO2 in the process and then look at how they might be able to reuse some of that within their own brewing processes. That's definitely happening. And then, you know, from that fermentation process that we have, you know, there is an enormous opportunity there. So it's interesting thinking about what we could potentially do. It's the time frame in which we need to develop that capability, which is a problem, because when you have a squeeze on it, then you become reliant. And so we're looking at different ways that we become less dependent on the big plants. But it's something that we're going to need support from DEFRA and the government with if we are going to be helping to stabilise that market for the future.
Would that end up effectively making the government subsidising the drinks industry if it made a deal where they paid, for instance, CF Industries to keep a plant open that would otherwise be uneconomical?
Well, the government did intervene in 2020, and that support created the surcharging system, unfortunately, which has embedded a higher cost in the system. But it supported us with the supply at that moment in time, and it saw us through. The government have indicated they're not prepared to continue subsidising this moving forward. So it may be that they have to look at how we can support that supply chain. Is somebody going to come in and maybe step into the plant in Billingham? Are they going to be able to find alternates? They're hoping a lot of anaerobic digestion plants will come online by the end of the year so that next year we wouldn't see the same problems. So it is a complicated and complex process, but the government need to be supporting people that are finding solutions is what I would say.
Yeah.
So if they don't have the subsidy, then can they help support that? We have major problems with the capture and the transportation. So is that part of the solution, though? Because it may not be just for our industry, but others, we can lean in and support other industries as well, so that amongst us we can find a network of ways to ensure we all get a fair share of supply. And that's a major issue for us, because of course when our production is impacted, we know that there is a priority list, and sometimes perhaps we're not seen as a key priority on that list, so we need to make sure that we're all working together to ensure that safe supply.
Yeah. So Mark, I'm interested in the extended ramifications of significant supply chain shifts like this. You know, if a fertilizer plant that's producing a vast amount of resources stops, I mean, presumably this has impacts not just on CO2 and drinks, but also on the fertilizer industry and farmers. And if we're not producing fertilizers, I mean, are we going to be seeing a relative drop in the productivity of agricultural land as well?
Well, I mean, I expect so. I'm fundamentally a chemist, so I can certainly express an opinion. You know, we've seen this in the news already, haven't we? You know, concerns about supply of fertilizer, about fertilizer prices increasing dramatically, and farmers being very concerned about how the impact that's going to have on their costs, and so the costs of food for us all. But, you know, we are really dependent on fertilizer. The ability to produce fertilizer was essentially responsible for the population boom of in the 20th century. You can plot a graph of fertilizer production against population, and they correlate really nicely. I know correlation does not always imply causation, but you know, there is a real link there. Food production is absolutely dependent on fertilizer. I mean, there's a figure, I must try and find it. That's right, something like 80% of the nitrogen in our bodies comes from fertilizer.
Yeah,
eventually,
yeah.
You know, and so the nitrogen that we need to grow and produce proteins and so on is sourced from the fertilizer industry in a way. So we're all here because of it, and it is therefore a real, you know, it is a concern when the price of fertilizer increases so dramatically.
So Emma, I'd just like to end with trying to sort of get a broader picture of this, because I'm interested in whether or not you feel this is a UK specific problem that the UK government should really help with, or is this an international problem that everyone is feeling across Europe, for instance, and are there comparisons to be drawn?
I think that this is part of the energy crisis. The cost of production for fertilizer has gone up substantially to the point where they feel their profitability is not there. And so ceasing production in order to wait out for cheaper energy costs in order to reduce that and increase their profitability is the issue. And that's why it isn't only the UK that's experiencing this. We're experiencing that all across Europe. And so we're hopeful that as the energy prices come under control and reduce, that we'll see more of these plants, fertilizer plants, get back online. And that's important all the way through. You know, we always say from grain to glass, that we're part of the whole of that chain. And so from farmers using the fertilizer through to us using the byproduct at CO2, as well as the grain that's produced from it. You know, this is something that we all need to focus on because it's part of food security. And so, yes, beer is a food and classified as such and is maybe seen as something that is more just of, you know, an affordable luxury. But actually, we are a key part of that food chain. And that's why, together with actually the NFU, DEFRA, our colleagues at the Food and Drink Federation, we all lobby together, not only the UK government, but keeping an eye on that international scene. We do that through the Brewers of Europe to make sure that we do have that consistent supply. Because when we do have shortages here in the UK, we normally are able to lean into international supply chains. That hasn't been possible on this occasion, as we've seen plants close in Poland, for example. So, you know, this has been a problem, and I hope that we'll see a resolution to it. But I think the government does need to look at how we can incentivize people in the UK, be it farmers, be it brewers, that find different ways of adding their own supply of CO2 to that supply chain. I think if we could see investments, incentives for that, then we might be able to continue to find solutions as industry ourselves.
Which sounds like a very good idea, because the problem is, as I can see it from my, you know, ignorant point of view, is that you've got one industry completely unrelated to another industry, but reliant upon it. And so the fertilizer industry almost, you know, what the heck? You know, it's our profits that are being cut here, and the drinks industry will just have to suffer for it. So it's one of those really problematic things. Are you optimistic that this is going to get resolved before creating a lasting damage to the drinks industry? What's your feeling at the moment?
I really hope that the announcement of the energy cap for non-domestic users, i.e. businesses, will help us through this moment in time by reducing the costs and keeping supply up and running. But it is part of our perfect storm, as I say. We've already got labour shortages. We've seen the cost inflation, the cost of living crisis for the sector, as well as the energy. So we are a sector, as the beer and pub sector, under an awful lot of pressure. And we want to continue to be at the heart of our communities and producing fantastic British beers and providing that very warm welcome in our great British pubs. But this is something that adds extreme pressure to that. And so I really hope that we can find a way through that by controlling some of the energy crisis, by emerging, but keeping consumers feeling confident to come out for that affordable pint at the pub.
Yeah, well, good luck, because if I feel that my pint is in jeopardy, I get very, very worried. This has been absolutely fascinating. Emma McClarkin and Mark Lorch, thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
Perfect.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. Remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, go on, leave us a review. Thank you so much for listening.